I've never played Borderlands, though.
Well, that's okay, because I feel like this movie is definitely aiming itself towards people who have not played the games. Obviously, there's going to be like plenty of in-jokes for people who do, but I feel like they're deliberately kind of... The trailer is cut to like an Electric Light Orchestra track, so it's got big-time Guardians of the Galaxy vibes. They're trying to like set up the same sort of ragtag team who go off on an adventure and they don't really like each other kind of dynamic.
That feels like every single Kevin Hart movie.
Yeah, and but like Kevin Hart, I mean, I can touch on the casting and why that's weird in a bit, but like this movie has been in post-production hell for a long time. I think they actually wrapped shooting like 3 years ago.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah, and like, I mean, if you'd played any of the games, then you might have seen some of the updates and kind of like paid a bit more attention to them. But yeah, like it's been a kind of a open secret in Hollywood that this project has been a little bit in trouble for a while, and they brought in a pretty well-respected head of like a VFX studio to do the reshoots. They kind of took it away from Eli Roth. That's kind of an interesting development. You know, it doesn't always bode well when they can't get the original director back to do reshoots. And obviously, but then when it takes like 3 years in post-production, so something is going kind of screwy with this one. Maybe the script isn't quite right, or I don't know. But there's an opportunity for like lots of kind of sassy humor in this. That's kind of the whole idea of those video games, is this very kind of dark sense of humor with, you know, lots of violence and stuff. And it theoretically would be R-rated. So
it's the curse of the video game franchise movies.
Yeah, just because we got good stuff out of like The Last of Us doesn't mean that the curse can't still kick back in.
But I know we're getting... was it Fallout?
Yeah, Fallout's coming out in like maybe a month and a half or something. That's going to be one to watch.
Oh, no. I'm thinking about Halo.
Oh, Halo. Yeah, I have not met a single person who's watched the Halo show. And yet...
Apparently, it's really terrible anyway.
Yeah, I saw some footage from it, like a breakdown. It looked like there was... It looked like it was ripped from the game. So I don't really know why you would bother watching the show if it looks identical to the game.
But they unmask Master Chief.
Yeah, I've heard
that. It's like the whole Dread problem.
Yeah, you don't
unmask the guy. Although I do like the Sylvester Stallone Dread movie. I think it's kind of a hilarious action movie, but...
Oh, I didn't see that one, but I did see the Carl Urban one. But
oh, okay.
Yeah. I've heard that there's lots of complaints from Halo fans about what they do to the lore of the games in that show. Okay. And
I guess to me is more indefensible. Yeah.
I guess Paramount Plus renewed it for a second season because they want to keep their original content library going or something.
No, because they just want to create a bunch of content so they could sell it to like Warner Brothers or something. Be like, hey, look how much content we make.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, that there's probably some mergers in the not too distant future with the way, Warner Brothers.
They have to.
Like, Warner Brothers is making a lot of money, and they're actually like turning a profit for the first time. So,
well, because they keep writing off movies for like tax breaks. So,
yeah.
How can you not turn a profit that way?
Yeah. That's sucky behavior. Anyway. So this Borderlands thing, I mean, it's coming out in August. I have no idea like what it's going to be like. It could be terrible. It could be a sleeper hit. The casting is bizarre because you've got like heavy hitters like Cate Blanchett and Jamie Lee Curtis in there. But then Kevin Hart is there in a role that was not originally supposed to be a very Kevin Hart type of role. He's playing a guy who's normally very like stoic. So that's interesting. And Jack Black is doing some voice work in there, a typical kind of Jack Black performance. So yeah, it's not guaranteed failure, but I'll be watching it just to kind of check it out after hearing all these bad rumors over the past few years.
We always say that you got to make time to see some bad movies sometimes, because it makes you appreciate the good ones even more.
Yeah, actually, and there's two movies that we're going to talk about in this episode that probably fall into that category. So
debatable. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. We're gonna get into it then. Should we start the episode?
Okay.
Welcome to the Extra Buttery Podcast. It's a show about movies, TV, anything with a story and actors on a screen, really. Join Jason Chan and Robert Snow's free-flowing conversation with deep dives into characters and plot with the occasional salty opinion. So get your popcorn. I got mine right here. Let's start the show!
Welcome to episode 123 of the Extra Buttery Podcast. My name is Robert Snow in Toronto, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Chen, in Vancouver.
Hello.
This time on the show, we're going to be talking about the possible travesty, or maybe camp classic, Madame Web, which opened a couple of weeks ago. We'll hear from both myself and Jason, find out which of us enjoyed themselves more than the other.
It's clearly me, because yeah. I don't think it's a travesty. I think it's bad, but not a travesty.
Okay. And then we'll also touch on the new Ethan Coen movie, Drive Away Dolls, which just opened this past weekend. We'll talk a little bit about what happens when a storied brotherly partnership breaks up and the filmmakers go their separate ways for a couple of projects, and what that means for the movies that Ethan Coen is planning to make with his wife, Trisha Cook. And then finally, we'll wrap things up with the top 10 of 2023. Jason and I will round out our favorite things from what we watched over the past year, maybe look ahead to some of the stuff that's going to come out in the not too distant future. So, Madame Web.
I don't understand what's happening.
I've been having visions.
I knew he was going to die.
I think I'm seeing the future.
I confess, like, I haven't watched all of Sony's efforts to kind of like make a side.
What haven't you seen?
Well, I haven't seen Venom 2. And I haven't seen Morbius.
Okay. So if you're going to say that Madame Web is a travesty, I highly implore you to watch Morbius.
Okay.
It is the bigger travesty by far. Interesting.
Okay. Because I've heard it the other way around. I mean, there are people who say that...
They're wrong. I can't believe how much hate Madame Web is getting. Like, it's kind of shocking to me. I feel like even before the movie came out, because of how poorly the trailer was cut, because of the really poor marketing campaign, I think people were ready to hate or hop on the hate wagon right off the bat. And I think that's really unfair.
I mean, that's fair. We are definitely in a period where it's trendy to hate on superhero movies more so than it was maybe 5 years ago. So, you know, usually when these kind of ups and downs happen in popular culture, you know, the hate train is more fun than the love train. But this one was like, this one faced a little bit of an uphill battle anyway, because we're dealing with a character, Madame Web, who, before I saw this movie, the only touchstone that I had for it was the character as she was presented in the old 90s animated show, mm-hmm. where she popped up in, like, I don't know, a handful of episodes. She was an old woman by the time you meet her in that show. And her whole thing was just like sending Peter Parker on some kind of vision quest to like understand his powers. She would try to tempt him with, like, I guess, doing things in a more villainy kind of way. But he would always like see the light by the end of the episode of the show and go back to, you know, the status quo being Spider-Man. So I guess Sony was looking at their stable of characters that they could adapt into movies, and they figured, hey, we've got Madame Web. Theoretically, she could be the center of this, for lack of a better word, or to quote the some of the posters, the center of the web of the Spider-Man characters. You know, I think on one of the posters it said, her web connects them all. So
yeah, like I said, a disastrous marketing.
Yeah, campaign. Yeah. So they decide to do a bit of an origin story with this character, flashback to when she's like in her 30s. They set the movie in 2003, theoretically, so that at some point in the future they might be able to bring in Tom Holland and have him do a few scenes with her, or some kind of team up movie, and have the ages make sense. Like, that would make it so that she would be, I guess, in her 50s or 60s, the character, when she meets up with Tom Holland Spider-Man. But I mean, to be honest, given the kind of box office receipts that this thing has been getting. I highly doubt that meetup is ever going to happen.
It's never going to happen. Yeah, it's never going to happen.
So, I mean, you can see what Sony was driving at here. They had this character. They wanted to build out their cinematic universe and, you know, maybe pull in bits of Morbius or bits of Venom as well while they were at it. They also wanted to use it as a launch pad for a few other female spider people, one of whom that I recognized from the recent Across the Spider-Verse. The costume was the same. So I could see the linkages there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, for me, this movie, it was really mostly brought down by its script. We talked about it before you saw it, but like, I like Dakota Johnson in other projects, so I had no problem with her in this. I felt like she was, you know, she does obviously have a bit of like an emotionless kind of thing with her. A lot of her performances, very like, you know, maybe slightly stonery delivery or whatever. but I'm fine with that, because with this, it was just like very hokey sounding dialogue. You could see the way that many rewrites had kind of wrecked this character and then the villain over the course of however much time it took them to get this thing made.
Well, okay, so this movie takes place in 2003, and I love how right now the touchstone for any movie set in 2000 or 2003 is a blockbuster. There is so much product placement in this movie. Did you see how many times Pepsi was in it? It was hilarious.
Pepsi, yes. They shoehorned in some like Britney Spears references and mm-hmm. Beyonce references to kind of try to. People pointed out that those were likely like reshoot additions. Maybe. Because they had originally planned for this movie to be set in the 90s, and then they kind of fast forwarded okay. a little bit.
Well, like the timing kind of threw me off, because this movie really felt like a superhero movie from the 2000s. I think Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker or Spider-Man would be perfect for this universe.
Yeah.
I think stylistically and story-wise, it doesn't fit in the MCU anymore.
No.
Just the same way how Venom felt really forced, the connection between that and the MCU.
Yes.
I will say, so I can simultaneously be a fan of Dakota Johnson and also like really hate on her.
Okay.
I think like low-key she's really funny. And I feel like in this movie, there is a sitcom about a single woman who has a terrible love life with Adam Scott as her platonic friend.
Right.
That could make a great TV series.
Okay, yeah.
Because I think the dynamic is pretty funny. And there's like a TV show there that I think you could get 10 seasons out of on cable.
But would
because I like the banter. I think it's pretty funny.
Would this show that you're imagining still have like Spider-Man connections, or was it just them?
No, just that. Like, it wouldn't okay. be a superhero thing. It'd just be a cable sitcom.
Okay.
And then when it comes to the superhero stuff, it is hokey. It is cheesy. But so were, if you're looking back at some of the superhero movies back in the 2000s, I felt a very similar vibe. It's more like, how much can you suspend your disbelief? The MCU made such an effort to ground everything in reality that when we see something as far-fetched and fantastical and nonsensical as this, we automatically just don't like it. But to me, comic book movies and comic books in general have always had this sort of unbelievable quality about them. And I never felt we were supposed to take him seriously. I blame Christopher Nolan for all the Batman stuff, for making like everything dark and gritty and realistic.
Okay, yeah, I can sort of see that. I mean, like this does not... This does not spend a lot of time trying to explain her powers or
no.
or whatever. It's all very, you know, the magic spider bit her mom while she was giving birth to Cassie Webb, and that's blah blah blah.
Yeah, I mean that was like a stupid origin story. I'm sorry, but
yeah,
it took a lot for me to believe in it. But once I did, I was like, fine, I'll take it. It was okay. But you know the scene where she like kind of finds out about her past and how her mom was this like spider researcher, and she tries to like jump on a wall to see if she could climb the walls like Spider-Man.
Yes.
That scene alone, you would never see in a modern superhero movie, because it's too much of like a physical comedy.
Oh yeah.
Unless you're talking about Thor is like wacky on its own. right?
That's a good point. I mean, it definitely felt like they were referencing the Sam Raimi scene where Tobey Maguire...
A little bit, right?
So, I agree with you on that. Like, I just feel like that particular scene could have had better comic timing, but that's a kind of a quibble, you know?
I just think you're right, though. The backstory with the whole spider research, the whole, like... I almost laughed when she had a vision of her mom. Mm.
And she was like able to like interact with her mom in the dream.
Yeah. It's never explained quite how her powers work. But anyway, I thought by far the weakest part of the movie, the worst part of the movie is the villain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is probably the first time I've seen this level of ADR, like automated dialogue replacement, applied to a villain, to the major character in a superhero film, in an effort to like fix what the actor said when he was on set.
He didn't sound menacing.
No.
Like he doesn't have a very villain voice, you know?
No. And his whole motivation for what he's planning to do is so flimsy.
Yeah. I'm unsure of what he actually is.
Yeah. He had a dream that three women were going to kill him. And so he becomes obsessed with this, and he pours all of his time into running around trying to find these women inside of, you know, a huge city like New York, and hires Zosia Mamet to sit at a computer all day going over security footage. And then he finds them and plans to kill them. But
why?
But, you know.
But what, like, why would the girls want to kill him?
Exactly.
Like, what has he done in the past that's so evil, other than murdering the protagonist's mom?
Yeah, and they wouldn't know that, so...
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I think the plot could have been better. I think it's very flimsy, but I thought the action was well choreographed and very easy to understand
and
comprehend.
Parts of it were not the final showdown on that derelict building, though. That was, I found that
with
very,
the huge Pepsi Cola sign.
Yeah, I found that very confusing. I could not figure out where the people were in space.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't mind that. I thought the way they sort of showed her kind of seeing the future and then going back in time, I thought was really cool. How she like experienced certain things twice.
Right. Yeah. That probably worked the best out of all of the like displays of the superpowers.
I will say though, that some action didn't make sense. There's this part where she like gets trapped in the car, falls into the water, mm-hmm. and then somehow she's saved by Adam Scott and there's no one else around them.
Yeah.
And it's assumed that he dives in and saves her, pulls her out of this car while she's unconscious.
Yeah.
And no one else is there to help her. I don't understand that part.
I also like when she goes into she goes to Peru to try to understand her past. Yeah. She's like, hilarious. I gotta get on a plane. And then she, you know, she leaves the three girls that she's trying to protect from the villain with Adam Scott's character and takes off to Peru, gets one bus from the airport, you know, just hops on a bus and she's like, all right. And she drives for a little while in the bus and then gets off the bus. And then wouldn't you know it, the guy that she needs to find is sitting right there in the forest. And then he's like, hey,
right?
the magical cave that you need to visit to unlock your powers is just around the corner here. Hey, come on with me. And then he pushes her in the water and bam, she has control of her powers again. And I was like, okay, we're on a tight schedule here, folks. Let's get this.
I appreciate how it kept moving, though, because I do feel like movies are too long.
I suppose, yeah.
But did it throw you off that Adam Scott is Ben Parker? Even if it was set in 2003, he is too young to be Ben Parker, no?
I didn't really think too much about the ages. Like, I guess the longer you think about it, yeah, there could be some questionable timing there,
unless there is another Ben Parker that I don't know about.
I mean, they're being pretty clear that like they, you know, they don't name the kid. They did, so the baby gets born, Emma Roberts gives birth to this unnamed,
but it's not Peter.
Well, they don't call it, they don't say his name, but they have this moment, this kind of jokey moment before before she goes to the hospital where, you know, Cassie is going to guess the name at the baby shower, but she gets interrupted, right? Because that's their tongue-in-cheek way of saying like, oh, Cassie would be able to use her powers to know the name, and everyone would say like, oh, how did you know? But
like, Peter's not even Ben's kid.
No, but he's not like, the Emma Roberts character is Ben Parker's sister, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. I missed that part. But I thought the baby shower scene was really hilarious because I could relate. And the whole part about where she was like, my mom died at childbirth. I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
That drew chuckles in my auditorium.
Yeah. Like
I said, there's a hilarious sitcom in this movie that could work on its own if you just cut out the superhero stuff. I will say some of the costume look a little dated, like very 2000s-y, but actually looks all right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the point because they're trying to evoke a certain time period, but
very comic book accurate, which I always kind of appreciate in movies.
And then there's the final little bit where they try desperately to do the linkage to movies that will never come, where they show off the characters in their in their superhero outfits, and you know, Cassie has got her red outfit with her special sunglasses or whatever.
I realized that we were watching a Madame Web origin film. I didn't realize we were also watching an origin film for three other superheroes.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me, honestly. I didn't know where they were coming, like why they were being introduced here, but maybe comic fans could, you know, explain that decision. So yeah, there's been some people who think that this will be like a camp classic. Like people will consider it like a so bad it's good movie that will be riffed on for years to come. I don't really buy it. I'm not sure that it's really going to have that kind of staying power.
Because there are jokes in it, because the humor is pretty light sometimes, I think it's better than Morbius, because Morbius takes itself way too seriously.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There is no humor in Morbius, but it is a hilarious movie. The only person who kind of realizes that this is a sort of like a B movie is Matt Smith. And I read somewhere that Matt Smith was duped into thinking that he was going to be part of the MCU.
Oh. In a very roundabout way, I guess he did. Yeah. But yeah.
But I've heard that a lot of actors signed up for these like Sony projects thinking they'd be part of the MCU Spider-Man universe, but no, that's not how it works. But I honestly don't see how this is like, was it 12%, 20% Rotten Tomatoes?
12%, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many worse films than this.
Yeah, oh yeah, I mean, like the Rotten Tomatoes score is only just like indicating like how many critics gave it a bad review, but I came in like 2 out of 5 on it. So it's not the worst thing that I've ever seen by any means. But it's also like not something I'd ever watch again. I couldn't.
Is this worse than Catwoman? Hell no. It's way better than Catwoman.
Yeah, Catwoman is definitely worse than this. I get more and more suspicious of the staying power of this particular genre, the way it's currently being done, and kind of holding out hope that the current guy who's playing Spider-Man will show up in a post-credit scene or something.
Glad there wasn't a post-credit scene.
I know. Like, that's pretty much the most that Disney would ever allow Sony to do, right? Because they have done a few little post-credit scenes in the Venom movies to sort of say, all right, this is how it works. It's like in a different dimension or something.
Well, there is that one where Michael Keaton shows up, but they just kind of abandon it. And I have no idea how that's going to work out. But I think we've moved on completely. And I'm actually kind of looking forward to the Fantastic Four phase because it has X-Men, which I love the X-Men. So, I mean, let's not rule anything out because anything could happen. And look how well Spider-Man No Way Home turned out. And by most accounts, people, when they were making that movie, thought it was going to be a huge bomb.
I mean, yeah, trying to keep all of the different versions of Spider-Man straight would definitely be a bit of a spooky kind of proposition.
Because from what I know, or from what I read, it was that like thing, they started filming and doing all sorts of things without really having a lot of things in place. If I remember correctly, Tobey Maguire like joined really late.
But that's also like, that's become increasingly part of Marvel's way of working up until recently. They were able to kind of coast on this sort of, we'll figure it out in the editing room type of filmmaking. And I think it's bitten them in the ass on a few projects now, and they would do well to kind of maybe reconsider a little bit, because you can have all of the, you know, you can have all of the different linkages planned out on some like crazy wall with like red string going between the bits. But if you don't have good scripts from the beginning, I think that eventually catches up with you.
I ended up giving Madam Web 2.5 stars too.
Oh, so you're a half a star ahead of me. Okay. That doesn't happen all the time.
No, I kind of feel like we need to defend this movie. I need to defend this movie.
Okay. All right. Well, transitioning over to a movie that I was actually kind of excited for and was a little disappointed by, Drive Away Dolls.
We just want to locate your friends.
Who are you, jackass?
That's when women curse like that.
Those girls just drove off with something we need.
Call the cops.
Cool your jets. Here's what we do.
Sell it back. Shake them down.
That is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I'm a cop.
How much do you know about this one?
Not much. Please enlighten me. I just know Pedro Pascal's in it.
Okie dokie. Well, you may recall that back in 2018, the last Coen Brothers movie where they worked together, co-directing, came out, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which they made for Netflix.
Loved it.
Yep. I loved it too. And then sometime after that, apparently, Ethan Coen, the younger brother, kind of lost his taste for filmmaking. He didn't really want to make movies anymore. And Joel Coen, his brother, decided, oh, well, you know, no big deal. I'll just go off and make a project that I want to make. And so in 2021, Joel Coen released The Tragedy of Macbeth, which was a very straightforward adaptation of the Shakespeare play with Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand. And it was incredibly well done. The cinematography was like top notch, very stark images and stuff like that. But then word got out a couple of years after that, that Ethan Coen had kind of like rediscovered his mojo, if you will, and had an idea for a trilogy of movies that he would write alongside his wife, Trisha Cook, and direct solo. And so this movie, Drive Away Dolls, is the first of these three. The second one is called, I think, Honey Don't. I don't know when that's coming out. It might be a couple more years from now before that's ready to go. But this first one stars Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan as a pair of women living in Philadelphia in 1999. And they get drawn into this kind of small-time crime caper where Pedro Pascal, who you just mentioned, plays a guy known as The Collector, who is attacked in an alleyway in Philadelphia late one night, and the silver briefcase that he's carrying with him is stolen by mysterious thugs. And then we kind of smash cut over to the two women, played by Qualley and Viswanathan, and we learn a little bit about them. You know, Margaret Qualley plays Jamie. She's a very like free-spirited type of person, unemployed, thick Texas accent. Whereas Viswanathan plays Marion, who is very buttoned up, kind of a killjoy. But both women kind of want to get out of Philly and make a clean break. So they decide to rent a car and drive down to Florida and start new lives. Obviously very different personalities, so they don't really get along very well. But along the way, the thugs who stole the briefcase realize that they stowed the briefcase in this rental car. And they decide to give chase and go after these two women, try to track down the briefcase.
This sounds like a Guy Ritchie movie.
Little bit. And like, you know, compared to something like The Tragedy of Macbeth, this sounds a whole lot more like what you'd expect from the Coen brothers, even though it's just one of them. And it was for all those reasons that I was kind of looking forward to it, because, you know, the who would say no to another kooky Coen brothers comedy, especially when you've got good actors on board and all that kind of thing. Problem with this thing, though, is that it's very disjointed. It's kind of like individual scenes would work on their own as like a comedy sketch or a short film, but they're kind of jammed together with these really over the top transitions, like almost like a star wipe, not quite that obvious, but like just like big animated kind of like door swinging, like rudimentary transitions that really call attention to themselves. And then there's these like psychedelic 1960s drug interludes with a celebrity cameo that I won't spoil, that leave you going, okay, what? Why are these things here? Why are we linking the scenes with this?
Well, that's what happens, I guess, when you get one half of a filmmaking duo. It's like half a brain.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunately, it's a little bit of that, you know, and you don't want to say anything too mean about Ethan Coen, but it just feels like he's trying to do something that isn't quite gelling, and like you just can't understand what kind of references he's making or what type of movie that he's aiming for. And so then you're kind of disconnected from the movie, and no matter how much the actors try, you're not really caring about their characters. It doesn't help either that like Quali and Viswanathan have very little chemistry together. Like they play very different characters, and the movie kind of just like jams them together and forces them to fall in love in a way that doesn't make a lot of sense. So there's this really like bizarre sex scene that I've seen some people say is quite romantic, but for me it was like it had all of the energy of a limp fish. I was like what? this seems a little awkward, actually. It's so passionless. So it's full of weird choices, and you kind of end up leaving the theater being like, okay, I can see some of the merits in this, but it's largely a misfire for me. And that's the first time I've ever said that about a Coen Brothers movie, I think, in a long, long time. So yeah, I'm a little sad about that.
Mm. That's too bad. Why did the Coen Brothers like break up? Is just burnout?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really talked a whole lot about it. I think Joel Coen went on a podcast a couple years ago and said something like Ethan just didn't want to make movies for a while. So
just a little burnout, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're not known for talking in great detail about their process, but yeah, that's pretty much all the info I could find on it.
But also because they've always been not like anti-studio, but they've always kind of walked in and made films based on the beat of their own drum.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And the, like that reflects itself in the stories and the characters that they chase after too. Like, mm-hmm. You know, it's always about kind of quirky individuals, cynical situations. You know, there's always a bite to the movies that they make, and they don't necessarily make things that are like the most commercially successful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they probably enjoyed working at Netflix for Ballad of Buster Scruggs, because there wouldn't be many studios back then who would have financed a anthology movie about a bunch of, you know, different Wild West stories, right? That was at the time Netflix was basically handing out money to whoever wanted it for weird projects like that.
So should I go see it or no?
I would say, like, if you consider yourself a Coen Brothers completionist, like if you want to see everything that these guys make because you loved everything before and you just want to say that you've seen it, then I would see it for that reason. But don't go in expecting like a very cohesive movie at all. If you like the actors involved, I guess I can recommend it on that front. But the characters they play are not particularly funny, and it just doesn't come together.
Maybe I'll pass. That was not a great sell job.
No. I mean, I feel like I'm doing a little bit of consumer awareness right now. Like, okay. You know, okay. Just warning people that it's not the Coen Brothers stamp of approval that you'd expect to get from me.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like Wes Anderson. I feel like there's a certain demographic and a certain type of moviegoer who likes their films.
Yeah, but I mean, like with Wes Anderson, like Asteroid City, which I'm going to mention in the next segment, Asteroid City was like, he's operating at like the peak of his power. Like it was fantastic. Like everything about that movie I loved. Whereas this was just like, I don't even think the fans would be entertained by this.
Mm, fair enough. I'm kind of at the opposite end of the spectrum. I couldn't really bring myself to see Asteroid City. I missed a lot in 2023, actually, to be honest. I was looking back on it. But I don't know if that's just a reflection of the movies or just me.
I don't know. I mean, well, you were saying before we recorded that, you know, the longer ones are hard to cram in. So, you know.
Yeah. Time is... It's definitely an issue sometimes.
Yeah. But I mean, admitting for the fact that we haven't seen all of the top, you know, Oscar contenders or whatever for 2023. Mm-hmm. Do you want to give your current best 10 of the year?
Sure.
based on what you've currently seen.
Sure. Do you want to do it one by one, or should I just go through my 10?
Let's hear your 10 first.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just going to go off my Letterboxd ratings.
Sure.
And of course there's ties, so I'll try and rank them as much as I can. So my number one is Oppenheimer. I think that was by far the most well-crafted, engaging, thought-provoking film that I've seen all year. And the fact that it's 3 hours just, I think, adds to it. Very few movies these days I would be willing to sit that long for, even for a Terrence Malick film. Yeah, sometimes I struggle with it sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I do too, yeah.
Yeah, as much as I love Terrence Malick. Okay, number two, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah.
Number four, Killers of the Flower Moon. And then I have actually The Iron Claw. I don't know if you saw that.
No, I didn't see that one.
I really enjoyed
it. I thought about seeing it.
And then I have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Air, Mission Impossible, Creed 3. I'm going to throw The Flash in there.
Oh, interesting. Wow. He's defending two maligned superhero movies in this episode.
I know. Well, I would defend The Flash to the death. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen it
yet. You've seen it. I have. Dude, you need to... Dude, just like go in it with an open mind and you realize that some of the hate it got does not deserve.
I will admit that part of me that every so often I think to myself, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to finally watch it. And then I
find something else.
Some Oscar contender takes precedence. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I left a few off my list. So Barbie is a big one. Past Lives, Napoleon, Priscilla, John Wick 4, Maestro. Maestro is not a hard cut, though. I don't think that film was particularly good. But yeah. Anyway, that's my very jumbled up top 10.
Okay. Well, I mean, mine is similar, but then there's a few others on there. So number one, no surprise, Oppenheimer. I mean, and plus, like, sidebar, we've seen from the recent winners of like the SAG Awards, the DGAs, the PGAs, all of the Guild Awards, Oppenheimer is going to be sweeping the Oscars in about a week's time. So, you know,
I feel like this is the first time in a while we've agreed on the number one movie.
I thought that there was a decent chance that Barbie would win Best Picture as a consolation to Greta Gerwig not being nominated, but you can't like we've said many, many times in the past, you can't argue with the Guild Awards. So you can't like with any conscience say that Barbie is going to win Best Picture if, you know, it's if Oppenheimer is cleaning up all these precursor awards.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I couldn't get behind the Barbie thing. It was so overhyped.
But I'm just thinking like my initial instinct, and this was like months ago when I thought this, was that, you know, how like the Academy is always being criticized for picking out like artsy movies instead of big budget movies or mm-hmm. big grossing movies. Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, what if they tried to split the difference and they give like best director to Christopher Nolan, but then they give Barbie best picture as a kind of like way of saying, hey, Barbenheimer was the big story in the movies this year, so we're going to give the awards. That was my like, that was what instinct was telling me, but instinct was wrong. So
sorry, we got sidetracked.
Anyway, Oppenheimer number one. Number two, Poor Things. Fantastic. Of all of the ones that you have not seen yet from last year, I think Poor Things will make you think the most. The most interesting visuals, probably, other than the ones in Oppenheimer. And not as likely to fill you with dread as some of Yorgos Lanthimos's previous movies. I think it's got enough kind of bubbliness to it that you'll be like, oh, okay, I'm enjoying this. Number three, Asteroid City, which we talked about before. Number four, The Boy and the Heron, the possibly maybe final.
Oh, that's another one.
Final Miyazaki film. We don't know.
He always says that,
but then like he's one of the, I love Miyazaki because he's one of these guys who will say like, oh, I don't have another one in me. And then he's like, you know, going back for one more time, he'll be like, oh, I got another idea in me. I just got to get it out, you know, and he'll go back to the office and make another thing. And it'll probably be another masterpiece. So he's just that good. But yeah, The Boy and the Heron was fantastic. Then number five, American Fiction with Jeffrey Wright. I would not be mad if Jeffrey Wright won Best Actor for this. I know he won't. Like, it's kind of Cillian Murphy's award to lose at this point. But I thought it was really cool to see Jeffrey Wright at the head of a movie rather than just playing a supporting character. And he does a fantastic job. It's a really funny movie.
Mm-hmm.
Number six, Killers of the Flower Moon, which you already pointed out. Number seven, Past Lives. I bumped that one up a little bit.
You need to convince me why this is a good movie.
Past Lives?
Or like a great movie, yeah. Because I don't understand.
I mean, it's very understated. So it's like...
I get that.
It's kind of like a sleeper.
I feel like I've seen the same movie 20 other times before.
I don't know. It was just the performances. It was like... there's so much feeling behind those performances, even though they weren't really showy.
Fair enough. I just... I don't disagree with any of that. It's just... For a film that got so much hype, it just felt like something I've seen before. It felt like a lot of the themes I've seen before in other films. Yeah, it's hard to describe. It left me feeling a little empty. I wasn't really shocked by any of it.
That's fair.
I was really prepared to really get into it because I thought the opening shot with the three characters in the bar, and then you have the voiceover of people wondering what their relationships are. I thought that was an excellent setup.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of killed it from there because I didn't feel like any of the characters were that compelling. And maybe that's the draw, is that these are very normal people. Because you got the high achieving Asian immigrant woman, the really like stilted traditional Asian male, and then you got the insecure neurotic Jewish dude.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, just because it's a it's like the one that everyone's talking about does not necessarily make it, you know, work for everybody naturally. And like, you know,
yeah, it's fine. It's not it's a decent movie. I have a hard time thinking that it's a top 10 film. But anyway, I digress.
You know which movie I felt bad about, though? Not this current Oscar cycle, but the previous one, After Sun, with Paul Mescal. Remember how much everyone was talking about that?
Oh, yes.
So like for that, I mean, I enjoyed watching After Sun. I could appreciate it as like a piece of art, but I didn't get the hype on that one. And... you know, did he win the Oscar for that after? I forget.
I don't think so. Paul Mescal?
He was nominated, at least.
He was nominated, yes. But I didn't think he won.
Oh, did yeah, because I guess he lost...
I can't remember.
I guess he lost to Brendan Fraser. Yeah, okay. So anyway, like, you know, at the time, everyone was, like, singing his praises, saying that, you know, it was a great performance. You know, he was, running in a kind of, like, close second to Brendan Fraser, and he didn't end up getting it. But, yeah, After Sun, I thought it was a great debut film, but I just didn't really connect with it. But, yeah, anyway, that was a previous year. So after Past Lives, I put, for number eight, Godzilla Minus One.
Mm-hmm.
And then for number nine, Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
And then my number 10, I don't know if you saw this, Dream Scenario with Nicolas Cage.
I'm surprised Barbie didn't make your list.
No, I mean, like, I liked it well enough. It's probably my top 15. Okay. So
why do I remember you being like a big fan of it?
I mean, I think I only gave it like 4 out of 5. So
do you feel like you like it less than the general public?
I like it less than its target audience. That's for sure. Because I'm not in the target audience.
Aren't we the target audience?
I mean, I've never played with Barbie, so I can't really call myself target audience.
I don't think the target audience is people played Barbies. I think the target audience is people like at our age who understand that like this whole gender stuff is kind of nonsense sometimes. Greta Gerwig is our age, basically. The demographic, if anything, I would say is not the girls who played with Barbie. But maybe the girls who outgrew Barbie or realized the faults of Barbie.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. So it does have a definitely a wider net than that. But I still, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm a guy or something. I don't.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I don't think it made a huge political statement. I don't think the jokes were that funny. I don't think it was as edgy or racy or as thought-provoking as it could have been. I think it was a funny satire. I think it's weird that Ryan Gosling got nominated and no one else
did. Yeah.
If anything, if you're going to nominate him, you might as well nominate everyone.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it does. I think more than one person pointed out that it was almost misunderstanding the point of the film to have Ryan Gosling.
It was really, really odd. And I, as much as I think Ryan Gosling was better than Margot Robbie in that film, I don't know if he was like the star. But again, I thought that film was very underwhelming. I didn't think America Ferrera was that great. And I thought, what's her name? Kate McKinnon was hilarious, and she was probably the only hilarious character in the entire film.
Well, okay, so you've wrapped up why it's not in your top 10. So I share a lot of those same I share a lot of those same critiques.
It kind of gets me going a little bit when films I don't think are that good get so much attention.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like I said, I enjoyed it well enough for what it was in the moment. I think it's far more interesting as like a cultural object than a movie in many ways, because it's you know, the relationship to Oppenheimer and all of the fervor around that was what was interesting to me. So I couldn't really put it on my top 10. For that reason.
I truly admit, though, that I'm missing a lot of films. Does Holdovers count as 2023? It does.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm surprised that didn't come out in your top 10 either. But
I had it in there. I had it in there for a little while. I think I subbed out the Holdovers in favor of American Fiction, actually.
Okay. So I totally admit that there's a bunch of films that I missed and probably would have made the top 10. So ours would look fairly more similar, I should say.
Maybe. I mean, you don't tend to go for the Nick Cage stuff, though.
Part of it is just because it's hard to find for me. There's not many theaters in Vancouver in my area that play these, like, I wouldn't say artsy films, but definitely sort of
indie movies.
Yeah, niche indie movies. There's a theater that does play it that's fairly close, but I hate going to that theater because it's kind of gross and nasty.
Is that the one I've been to when I've been in Vancouver?
The one where we saw Claire Foy.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not the nicest run, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just kind
of
gross. And
if you have, if you have a choice of where to see something, you probably wouldn't pick that one.
The only time I went was if it was really a movie that I want to see, and that was Ninja Turtles. And that was the one movie where I could like bring myself to go to that theater.
Yeah. No, but Dream Scenario is not something that I saw in theaters either, but I tracked it down, did a rental on YouTube actually. And, I highly recommend that one. There's a reason I put it in my top 10, because it has some very interesting things to say about online fame specifically, because Nick Cage plays this.
Is this like Ingrid goes West?
A little bit, but it has a different point to make, which is that, you know, Nick Cage plays this bumbling professor, and he has like absolutely boring life, but then for no reason at all, he starts popping up in people's dreams all over the world. This one guy, and nobody can explain it. And at first he's just a benign presence, but then over time he becomes more malevolent in the dreams. But obviously the real guy is just a normal professor. So he gets his 15 minutes of fame. He gets his like several days of fame where people start recognizing him on the street. And then he gets invited on TV shows. People want to be his agents and his managers. But then he responds to it in the absolute worst way. He gets very selfish. And it shows how like a little bit of fame can go to your head. It can corrupt you. And, and it doesn't really take any attempts to explain how this happened, but it's got some very keenly observed little bits and pieces that I think, you know, if you've followed any kind of like online drama or sports drama or anything involving a little bit of fame in the past 10, 15, 20 years, you'll find something to enjoy about this. So,
okay. Well, if there's a film in my top 10 that I think maybe you want to give a chance, is, and that I feel like you might like, is Iron Claw.
Yeah. Okay. That one was like, you know, I was interested in Zac Efron's turn towards like Oscar contender type material. So I was already kind of interested in it when I heard it was coming out. I love the like He-Man look that a few of those guys have because they just look.
Well, it's based on a true story, but like all the actors in it are really good.
Okay, yeah. And then Jeremy Allen White is like obviously riding a big wave of interest post The Bear. So that's interesting too.
Do you ever watch The Bear? It's a great show.
I'm about to get into it now.
The first season is like, it almost makes you want to do coke because it's so fast paced yeah. and like stressful.
I watched the premiere episode, the pilot. And I was like, whoa, the whole thing is like this. And then I got scared and didn't continue I didn't continue for a few months. And so now we're ready now. We just finished watching Severance, actually. We were 2 years late watching Severance.
And how is that? I'm multiple years.
I love it. Severance is so cool. Okay. It plugs in with a whole bunch of stuff that I love, both games and previous shows. And so like... Even we were 2 years late getting access to Apple Plus, so obviously the world has moved on from Severance season one, but now we need a new show to start watching, so that's going to be The Bear, and I'll slowly start being more zeitgeisty with what I'm watching. What do you know?
Do you have Apple Plus?
I got it through my brother, actually.
Have you seen the new World War II show?
Oh, Masters of the Air?
What about the pilots? Yeah, Masters of the Air.
I saw the trailer for it last night when we finished Severance, but...
Oh, I want to watch it so bad because I love Band of Brothers.
Yeah, it feels like a spiritual sibling to Band of Brothers.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a spiritual sibling to the Pacific.
Oh, well. Okay. Okay.
I mean, it's the same people, right? It's Tom Hanks and Spielberg.
Right.
But I mean, I'm kind of a sucker for anything Barry Keoghan.
Oh, yeah. He's in that too. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of creeps me out, but I'm just like, every time he's on the screen, I need to watch him.
I had this sense when we first like logged into Apple Plus or Apple TV Plus, whatever the hell they call it, where I was like, wow, there's a lot of different shows and movies on here that I have been meaning to watch and now I can. And I had this like, it reminded me of when I first got Netflix ages and ages ago, where you hadn't watched all of the cream of the creme kind of stuff yet, and there was all this possibility. So like, you know, I'm interested in The Foundation or Foundation with Lee Pace, and
Lee Pace is great.
The Godzilla show, the spin-off Godzilla show where they have different monsters for Godzilla to fight. Silo, stuff like
that. Is that good?
I don't know. I haven't watched it yet, but like, I see all of these options ahead of me and I'm like, okay, cool. I can enjoy this new streaming service and I'll probably watch like whatever it is, like 1% of the stuff on the platform. I'll be like, okay, I've watched all the good stuff. Time to leave.
Oh man. I just binge watched Drive to Survive on Netflix and it's nonstop. I haven't finished Gen V on Amazon yet. It's too much content and I really don't have that much time.
I know what you should watch on Prime next though. I'm joking, by the way, but
what? Tell me.
It's the Jennifer Lopez musical documentary about her love life.
I just saw an ad for this morning. Is it the Ben Affleck love thing? Like why they broke up in 2003? This is hilarious. Oh my God.
Did you know that she spent $20 million of her own money to make that?
Do you know she probably made money doing that?
Well, yeah. I mean, she wouldn't do anything if she wasn't going to get a return on it. But because obviously Amazon agreed to buy it off of her. But yeah,
that's Amazon's fault.
I have to commend her for doing such a weird navel-gazy project and making it in a way that makes people want to watch it. So... kudos to her.
Rob, if you were worth hundreds of millions and like a global superstar, would you do that? Would you do a vanity project?
Why
like
not?
That?
Is it only going to cost me 20 mil? Then sure.
No, you know what I'm looking forward to most? What? The eventual documentary about Meghan Markle and Prince Harry.
What's that going to be on Netflix? I guess, do they have a relationship with Netflix? I can't remember.
who cares? They don't have a relationship with anybody because apparently she's a huge grifter. But I just can't wait for the whole documentary about their like whole relationship, though.
Mm, yeah, it may come to that.
I think it's going to be hilarious TV and like riveting TV, too. And also trash TV.
Well, we went on a tangent, didn't we?
Well, we always kind of do. Oh, so can I just grab your bottom three films of 2023?
Bottom three. Oh, okay. You're catching me a little unprepared here. Hang on a second.
I just want to see how we start. I'll tell you my bottom three right now while you're looking it up. So okay. At the very bottom is Rebel Moon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, that makes it a bit easier. Hang on.
Number second from the bottom is Fast X.
Oh.
And it pains me to say, even though I'm a Fast and Furious family guy. And then number third worst is probably a tie between Quantumania and the Marvels.
Mm, yeah. Okay. So I'm looking back on it now and I feel like reflexively I've been too positive with a few of these. So
that's your issue, Rob. You're too positive and too
It's a real problem.
I have the opposite problem where I'm just like, it's not as good as everyone says.
Yeah. So, okay. We share the same worst movie of the year, Rebel Moon.
Rebel Moon?
Yeah. I gave it 2.5 and I'm kicking myself for doing that.
I gave it 1.
I know. It's definitely closer to a 1. And then number 2 is Leave the World Behind, the splashy Netflix one from Sam Esmail with Mahershala Ali and Julia Roberts.
Okay. Okay. Is that bad, eh? I heard it wasn't good, but I didn't know it was that bad.
I mean, it's maybe it was because I watched more good things than bad things last year. So it's,
right, okay.
You know, fair it's enough. Just at the bottom of the pile for me.
So what score did you give that?
I gave that 3, but it's more of a 2.5. So like I said,
2.5 to me is a decent movie. That's what I gave Madam Web.
And then at the same score, 3 out of 5 is Quantumania. Again, something that I should push back down, but... those were the lowlights of 2023.
Can you believe that Quantumania basically forced Marvel to like reset the whole thing? And Jonathan Majors, I guess.
Good for Evangeline Lilly that she did something good.
What, you didn't like her in Lost?
I mean, but that was before I knew that she was a little
cuckoo. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. When are the Oscars, by the way?
March the 10th. So,
oh damn!
I believe this episode will probably be out by then. And but then the next episode that our lovely listeners will hear, we will be talking about Dune Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
That is the biggest thing on the calendar for me right now in terms of upcoming stuff. And actually, we're coming out of a horrible dry period.
Yeah, January flew by though. I felt like January flew by.
Well, that's because then nothing opened. There was nothing that, like, I could not believe.
Well, I was away for a while.
Well, yeah, so that's a fair point. But, like, let me tell you, I was, like, searching for things to watch at the movie theater. And I guess you can blame part of that on the strikes that finished. Like, nothing was getting made, basically. So nothing was getting released. And they literally, like, Cineplex here in Canada was so starved for new stuff to release that they just started showing, like, episodes of a religious TV show.
No way.
So, yeah.
I did not hear about this. I thought people were just watching the Taylor Swift concert.
Well, there was that. That was back last year, though.
That was last. 2023 is last year.
This new Dev Patel movie, Monkey Paw, I think it's called, or Monkey Man.
Oh, yes. You sent me the trailer. Roadhouse remake, Ghostbusters. I still haven't seen any of the new Ghostbusters, eh?
Neither have I. I haven't seen the all-female one. I haven't seen the one with Paul Rudd, either of the ones with Paul Rudd. Godzilla X Kong, the new Empire.
I guarantee you that's horrible.
But it's goofy.
It's not even goofy. It's just horrible.
The last one was good. They were fighting Mechagodzilla.
The last one was good? You take that back.
I will not. I enjoyed the hell out of that movie.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. It was great.
No, it was not. I can't do this anymore. No, it sucked. It was stupid. Except for the last 10 minutes when Godzilla was fighting that Mechagodzilla, everything about it sucked. You can't tell me you enjoyed that after watching Godzilla Minus One.
No, see, those the two things exist in different worlds. Like, you go.
They're both Godzilla.
You go see the legendary Godzilla for like the absolute brain deadness of it all, and then you go see Godzilla Minus One for like real movie making.
No, Godzilla should not be mindless like the way the Americans do it. It's stupid. No, I refuse to accept this. I will never ever watch that movie ever again. Oh my god, I can't believe you enjoyed that. Madam Web was better than that.
No way. No, not in a million years it wasn't.
Oh my god. They're basically in the same tier.
No, this is I had way more fun at Godzilla versus Kong.
Oh my god.
And okay, so moving on from that, Civil War, the new Alex Garland movie.
That
very interesting looking.
That also gives me the creeps cuz it feels like it's a little too realistic.
Yeah, so
a little creepy.
Curious to see how that goes down. New Guy Ritchie movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Could be good, could be like more of the same from...
I don't mind Guy Ritchie. Plus, I'll watch anything with Henry Cavill. Rebel Moon 2.
Ah, you're excited for that? When does that come out?
No, I just thought I'd mention it.
The Fall Guy coming out in May.
How do you feel about that, by the way?
I really don't know. I like Ryan Gosling. I really like Emily Blunt. David Leitch is a great director for action, so I feel like it's a good combo. It might be cringy. I couldn't tell you, but the trailer made it look really fun. I was very interested. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
I love that entire trilogy, so I'm definitely looking forward to that one. But it's not Matt Reeves anymore.
No, it's a guy named Wes Ball. Furiosa is coming out. Hitman. Very excited for Hitman. New Richard Linklater with Glenn Powell in the lead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited for that.
Glenn Powell having like a very, like his turn in the spotlight kind of deal.
Yes, big time. Deadpool and Wolverine.
That one's good. That's the one superhero movie that I've actually been looking forward to.
I'm curious. I don't, it may get me back to... enjoying Deadpool again. I don't know. Deadpool 2, I have mixed feelings about.
Why?
I just didn't... I'm getting tired of Ryan Reynolds' shtick.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I can appreciate that. I can appreciate that. Kraven the Hunter, that's going to be another terrible Sony movie. I guarantee it.
Sony's like gritting their teeth on that one, hoping that it does even a little bit more business than Madame Web. Mm-hmm.
There's a new Transformers movie that's like all animated, I think, like CGI.
I will let you watch the Twister sequel for me.
Okay. Have you ever seen the original Twister?
Oh, yeah. And I have nightmares about it to this day.
Oh, really?
I do not.
That traumatizing, yeah. Eh?
I'm terrified of tornadoes, and I cannot bring myself to watch Twisters, no matter if Glenn Powell is having a great year and is appearing in it.
All you inland people have never experienced a hurricane or a typhoon like I have.
Yeah, I prefer to keep it that way.
Although tornadoes are inland, aren't they?
They are.
It's hurricanes that are by the water. Yeah, hurricanes and typhoons.
I'm less, like, obviously hurricanes are to be feared, but I'm less worried about a hurricane because, you know, you have a lot of warning when a hurricane's coming towards you. You'd generally be like, yeah, I don't want to be in that area when that thing happens. But tornadoes just come out of nowhere and friggin' like destroy your own house and then don't touch anybody else's. So there's like a randomness to it that freaks me out.
I can't tell if you're talking about tornadoes or toddlers. Okay, all right. I think there's enough to look forward to. There's also the Joker sequel.
Yes.
I mean, we're in like August by this point, so we're looking way ahead. There's a Beetlejuice sequel. I do feel like this year is going to be really interesting, just with the strike being over and all these sequels and stuff. I'm sure there's enough out there to keep us busy.
Yeah. But as you said, we have to actually carve out time to see it.
I know.
Check back next time for our review of Dune Part 2. We'll find out if Jason thinks that Dune actually deserves a full 5 out of 5.
Probably not, but...
He suspended his judgment. He claimed that he couldn't vote one way or the other when he saw only half of Dune back in 2021.
Well, did you hear what Denis Villeneuve said?
I did. I heard what he said. This is already turning into a new tangent.
I told you, you have to watch the entire 4 or 5 hour thing for it to be judged properly.
Okay. See, we're a rare indigo. That's how excited we are to talk about this. But until then, my name is Robert Snow in Toronto.
And I'm Jason Chen in Vancouver. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.
The Extra Buttery Podcast is written, recorded, and produced by Jason Chan and Robert Snow. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to rate and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. And remember, popcorn is always better with extra butter.